Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
WEEI Afternoons. Nice job, Brian Frazoco. I gotta be honest, we've said this before. I'm a sucker for a montage.
Love him.
I like Stephon Diggs.
Love him.
25% more after listening to that montage.
Yeah.
I'm all in. All right, bump the numbers up. Curran was right. It's 85 catches. It's 1,200 yards. It's 13 touchdowns. The whole damn thing after you listen to that.
I don't care if he's not, you know, worthy of my sister. That's okay.
Right.
Wait, did you guys hear the Ted? Do you know the famous ending to that video?
I don't.
Diggs said he didn't want to date any of their any guy who said that. He said he wouldn't want to date their sister because they were ugly.
Okay,
that's something I would say.
There you go.
That is definitely something I would
say. Dude, Andy, if you're not in a Diggs jersey by August, then this entire operation is a charade.
And something just hit me, Fitzy. So you were complaining. Was that yesterday?
Because I was awake.
Yes. but were you? You were complaining about May being a little.
A little too soft.
Yeah,
a little
bland.
Not assertive enough in his public commentary.
So we've talked about the idea that maybe Stephon Diggs will be a little bit of a headache for May. He's got to have the Diggs ratio and get him 8 touches or whatever. Let's flip that a little bit.
Okay.
What if Diggs, with all the competitive, cocky attitude he brings, mm-hmm. injects a little bit more fire under the keister of Drake May and says, F that, Drake. You're one of the most talented quarterbacks in the NFL. Stop being so deferential. Stop being so bland, so Fitzy on WEEI Afternoons sad about how you're acting. Is it possible we're looking at this the wrong way and he could be a confidence builder for Drake May?
This Fitzy guy's been giving you the business. That's not even his real name.
It's true. It's a character.
Yeah, it's a shtick. I 100% think he could unlock his swag. I think he could absolutely take Drake to the next level. 100%. Like, just the idea that Drake May, like, who knows how confident he was in his own abilities. Like, maybe he felt badly at the end of the season. Like, oh, I should have been able to elevate the game of those guys. I should have done better. I should have done more. Like, any football therapist would sit Drake May down and be like, dude, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. The line sucked. The receivers sucked more.
Right.
It's now all of a sudden like, oh my God, I can do this with a receiver who knows where he's going and he's not even fully healthy yet. This is incredible. Like, all tides should be raised on offense thanks to Diggs.
Every guy I've been reading, you know, Phil Perry, Mike Giardi, Tom Curran, everybody's talking about this guy's a dog. If the dog is happy, like he's got his dog kind of disposition, but inside he's like, you know, satisfied with the way he's been playing and the way, you know, the targets he gets, that's a good thing. You mm-hmm. want somebody with an edge, and particularly at that position where I think we don't have a lot of dogs. We got a lot of meows on wide receivers right now.
Well, the guys last year who tried to pretend they were dogs but were more meows.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And so if channeled the right way, it's the perfect mentality for a football player.
And we've talked about all these adults in the offensive room. There's a lot of adults, not just Mike Vrabel, the head coach, or Josh McDaniels, the coordinator. There's a lot of experienced veteran coaches.
That makes a difference.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes a difference.
They're not
going to
get walked all over by Diggs, right? And I don't even think the quarterback will. He's the least experienced of all of them, but to me, he's got a little je ne sais quoi.
And I think KC kind of alluded to this. You know, it's like didn't work out in Minnesota. Didn't work out in Buffalo. Texans ripped up his contract. Didn't work out there. There's a part, as you get older, sometimes you go, you know, I want it to work out.
Right.
And you kind of get tired of getting shipped out. And you want your legacy to be rewritten and different than maybe what it currently is. Hell, he hears all the criticism. He hears all the people doubting him. And the hope is that he comes here and he wants to prove everyone wrong. And it turns out that he's happier than a pig and poo to be here and helping this team turn it around.
Teddy Tex just chimed in with a pig and poo. I know you don't love social media or Twitter. You're a little bit like Jason Tatum, who on the New Heights podcast said, Twitter is not real. You shouldn't go on there. But I did put my poll on Twitter today, at Jumbo Heart, and I gave three choices as to reacting to the Stephon Diggs signing. Tell me what you would have voted if you took part in these types of things.
Yes, sir.
You feel great. He's a true number one. Meh, he's the best we got. Or, yuck, he's washed up headache.
Yeah, definitely two.
So that would be. And that's the leader, 49%. But
that's big. Half the people think that.
46%, just behind the 49%. 46% believe, great, he's a true number one. Okay. So 95% either think he's the best we got and I like it, or he's a true number one.
Yeah.
And adding on to the last conversation about narratives and legacies and all that, pretty cool feather in your cap. Who is the quarterback, Fitzy, that Drake May is most compared to?
The same guy that Steph Diggs used to play with and made his own name by after the Minneapolis Miracle.
Wouldn't that be a nice feather in Steph Diggs' post-30 career cap to say, yeah, I took Josh Allen and made him a superstar. I did the same damn thing a few years later with Drake May. I elevated those two guys who are now, you know, two of the top five quarterbacks, let's say, in football. That's a pretty good thing to have on your resume, especially if you're supposedly a bad culture guy or a diva receiver.
That's how you rewrite your legacy.
Absolutely.
1,000%. Maybe he can even play long enough, have a couple more 1,000-yard seasons to where you start talking about Canton. But if he leads the Patriots, never got to the Super Bowl with the Bills, a couple AFC title games, he's got some unfinished business. If he can lead the Patriots to the postseason and unlock that next level of Drake May and display more leadership than histrionics, make more history than histrionics, then yeah, I think that's a massive move for him. And don't forget, this is the last big money contract for him.
It has to be, right?
Probably.
He's not getting one over at age 35. No way, Ted, right?
I'm thinking that maybe he could entice him. If he thinks he can get another contract, then he'll go out there and he'll ball out like he's got another contract in him. But you're probably right. This is probably his last one, Fitzy. Yeah.
Do we have any concern about the age? Like, I was doing some Googling here.
He's going into his 11th year.
So there's a lot of analysis. The peak age for a wide receiver is like 26 to 29. Those are your prime seasons for a wide receiver. You know, there's a lot of guys that kind of fall off the map after 30. Then you mix in an exploded knee, ACL, MCL, coming back from. To me, that's just legitimate question, but also you roll the dice.
But it's crazy. He's 6 years in a row. He had over 1,000 yards. Oh, yeah. And last year, he probably wasn't get there, but he was going to get damn close as the number two.
Mm-hmm.
So he averaged almost six catches per game last year. Our best, DeMario Douglas, averaged less than four catches a game.
Like, that even sounds high.
It does. He's clearly far and away the best receiver that the Patriots have, obviously. And I don't know. I mean, you get 6 years in a row over 1,000 yards, and then last year you tear your ACL midway through, and you're on pace to getting close to that. It's pretty impressive. He hasn't had any drops or dips ever in his career.
Yeah, no, he's a professional wide receiver. No, somebody texted in, Fitzy. I don't know if you great question. If Diggs gets three more 1,000-yard seasons, is he a Hall of Famer? I would say no. I don't know how it all works out. If he takes the Patriots to the Super Bowl, if he's with Drake May and wins a Super Bowl MVP in there somewhere or something crazy like that. But just surface level, I had to yell at Dan Ball before the show because he's like, 1,000 yards. He was almost going to have 1,000 yards last year. I go, is that impressive? He goes, what do you mean? And I go, well, if you divide 1,000 by 17, you have 17 games. It's 58.8 yards per game. It's lost a little bit of a luster, especially in this day and age where everybody throws the ball 40 times a game.
What about 12 touchdowns? Just the touchdowns?
12 touchdowns is a lot.
Double-digit touchdowns would be off.
Absolutely. Double-digit touchdowns, big deal.
I would push back and say in this wide receiver room, I think 1,000 yards is impressive.
Yeah.
It'd be the first. I think I saw on Twitter, it'd be the first 1,000-yard receivers in Settlement in 2019, 18, something like that.
You know how many times Edelman did it?
No.
Solamente un.
Oh, Uno?
One time.
Wait, which year was that, 2013?
He was a no-time Pro Bowler.
Yep.
That production, we think of him, now he's got great postseason numbers, one of the all-time greats when you get to the postseason. In this day and age, sometimes it's hard to evaluate receivers. I was doing this today, Ted. I went down the list, tried to figure out, because I'm calling him your number one receiver.
He's our number one.
Okay. And where did that slot? You moved up from, in my opinion, you were at 32. Whoever you wanted to call your number one, Mac Hollins, Pop Douglas, you were 32nd.
The worst receiver room in the NFL.
So I went through and started to go team by team by wide receiver. I came up with what I think is, there's basically 22 that I think are better than Stephon Diggs. So you now have the 23rd best number one receiver maybe in the NFL. That's a jump. To go from the absolute bottom to jump a third of the league maybe, and there's young guys in there, you know, some fans of some teams would probably debate me on where certain guys slotted, but
You got him at 23.
Yeah, I got him about 23, and which is a nice jump.
How would you put the wide receiver room? How would you rank it in the NFL?
See, that's a little bit tougher.
27?
Yeah, a little lower.
26?
Because some of these rooms, you like Travis Bengals. Hunter,
then yeah, you go,
oh, absolutely.
You know, like the 12th and, or 15th best wide receiver room in the NFL.
I also believe that the domino effect of Stephon Diggs, and certainly the domino effect if you bring in Stephon Diggs and then Travis Hunter, yeah, and you now tell me, well, Mac Hollins or Pop Douglas is a 3 or a 4, and Kendrick Bourne is a 4. And Kendrick Bourne, coming off the ACL.
Which way is that going?
I like him,
guys.
I like him. I like him. I think he's going to have a nice year because he's going to fall into, remember Jabbar Gaffney? When he fell into that role and it was always like, wow, he really catches every third down or a touchdown, or he's always there. I don't think he's going to be a big volume guy. I don't think Kendrick Bourne's going to catch 85 balls. That's Stephon Diggs and maybe Pop Douglas. Yep. Maybe those are your two. I think you could
say. Is Bourne on this team, Andy?
Right now, I say yes. I think he's too good. The young guys, if the young guys beat him out, it's only because they're young guys and they were drafted and they get a second benefit of the doubt year or all that crap.
I hope he's on this team.
Because Kendrick Bourne is better than Jalen Polk and Javon Baker. He just is.
Not even, please.
But they were drafted and a second round pick. Are you going to cut him a year later? Elliot Wolf, you're still here. It's not even like a full regime change where you just blame it on that. So they might get their second year, but I don't know if they're going to earn it.
Do we think Robert Kraft had any influence in this signing?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That's where I would tie it into the little
Cardi B
graphic.
Because he's a Cardi B fan. That's
Cardi
right, Teddy.
Well, he does. Yeah.
Cardi, you know.
He could be.
Huh?
I don't know who Cardi B is. I'm not going to lie. I know the song, but like, I don't know if
RKK
I could.
You RKK dancing with Cardi B?
I don't know that I have.
I think he had. I think he probably got the deal pushed over. He's like,
it's,
you know,
Quavo's girlfriend. It's Quavo's girlfriend, Andy. Come
Who's
on.
Quavo? It's Quavo's girlfriend.
Migos.
Yeah. You know me. I listen to country music. That's what I listen to. I'm not up on Cardi B or Megan Thee Stallion or any of those people that are joining the greater Boston sports world.
Also, I should have said Quavo. I don't know why I said Quavo.
Oh, so you got it wrong and you're making fun of me? So screw you, Stiz. You're supposed to be my connection to the hip people and the cool music and all that stuff. 617-779-7937. Stephon Diggs. Hey, we did a montage. He's going to be a great receiver for the Patriots. That's the rule. You do a montage, the player plays great the next year. That's science.
That works.
Up next here on WEEI Afternoons, we're going to revisit our interview with Alex Cora on the eve of opening day, the first of a season-long Wednesday visit with the manager. He had a lot of interesting things to say about Crochet, Casas, the closer situation, the DH situation. Maybe that one's gone viral already. We'll revisit all of that up next here on WEEI Afternoons. But first, Dan Ball, give me that tremendous trending. Alex Cora from earlier this afternoon here on WEEI Afternoons, the first of his weekly Wednesday interviews with us. Which,
good interview, you guys. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah. And he'll be every Wednesday, usually in the 2 o'clock hour, 2:10, 2:30, sometime depending on game time. It'll be live in our Ford Fenway studios at Fenway Park during homestands and home games. And I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
I've told this to you, Ted.
Yeah. Good dude.
I like interviewing him because he's just a guy. There's none of that weirdness of interviewing Belichick where you're thinking too closely about your words because you're afraid he's going to like pounce on something or I mean, you heard him throughout the interview, and if you missed it
or dismiss a question that he thinks is stupid,
right? Like and try to make you seem stupid like for even asking the question. If you missed the interview with Alex Cora, we're going to replay a couple of the clips here, but you can go back on the Odyssey app. You can subscribe to WEEI Afternoons on the Odyssey app. It's free, AUDACY, just to make sure you know how to spell it. And that was him saying the team's ready for spring training. First and foremost, Ted Johnson.
Ready for spring training?
I mean, ready for the season after spring training, after a little fitsy, what is it called? Mexhibition action?
Mexhibition.
Exhibition.
That's a Fitzy original. Yep, get it? See what he did there?
Jeez, Louise.
That was close to a whole different thing. Yeah, it's spring training. You're away from your family, the hotel. I don't know what they're doing down
okay,
there.
Okay, all right.
10 o'clock. Geez.
But are they ready for the regular season? So we rode a roller coaster, Ted. We had the early buzz, and then we had a little fall where it was like,
yep.
Guys are hurt. Guys are sick. Guys are missing. The closer's not as good as we thought.
Yeah, Campbell's not hitting the ball.
Right. Giolito's not ready. Like all of this. Are we back to
Liam Hendricks?
Yeah. Are we back to they're ready?
Happy, joy, rainbows and lollipops. Absolutely. I'm curious what y'all's big takeaway from that, but I just get a sense when I listen to Alex Cora. I always like when the manager. It's kind of like the analogy I like to make is when I'm on a flight. And if I see the flight attendant, it's turbulent, and the flight attendants are cool, and there's, please put your seatbelts on, and there's casually walking down while the plane's bouncing around. I'm like, all right, I'm cool, it's cool, they're cool. But when the flight attendants are running for cover and there's turbulence, I'm like, oh, crap, we're going down. I like when Alex is in a good headspace. It just feels like he's happy. He feels like he's really just happy about his team and the depth. And the options he has and about their chances this year. And so that makes me relax and feel a little bit more confident. I just liked his overall tone.
Absolutely.
Of the interview. I think he's genuinely excited about the season. And I think you can look back, at history in 2012, 2018, the Red Sox had, for whatever it's worth, you remember really good training, spring training. And it led to really good seasons. So I think Alex puts in a good spring training season equates to usually a good regular season.
Fitzy, it's funny because Ted went with the flight, and I agree with you. When the flight attendant puts that seat down and puts her seatbelt on, I'm like,
they get in the jump seat, that's when you're like, oh, buckle up.
Better chug a lucky energy so I survive this thing. But Fitzy, the thing that popped into my head was the old Ronald Reagan, trust but verify. I think he believes a lot of things about his ball club, but he's also been around baseball long enough to remember times where he probably believed and thought things that didn't come to fruition, and he needs to see it unfold in the months of April and May and over the course of a long season. So that was what jumped into my mind, was like, trust, but I need to verify it on a major league, regular season game field.
He told us that they have a good ball club. Like he straight up said, we have a good ball club. Like I think he believes this is the best one he's had since 2018. He told us how grateful he was that the front office and the GM were aggressive in their pursuits of several different players that he wanted. And he believed that the team needed as well. And he reminded us from the question I asked him about the mighty rookie triumvirate that he got to baseball thanks to injury, and injuries happen, and you have to factor that into the equation, and you have to be ready for that as well, which is why there's good depth at the major league and now minor league level as well. So I feel like Alex Cora should be carrying. I'll go with another former president, Andy. I'll go with Theodore Roosevelt. That's why I think right now he is speaking softly and carrying a big stick.
Okay, we're talking about his baseball bat that he brings for batting practice and fungos and things that he hits. Stiz, the topic du jour about a month ago was Rafi Devers. Will he accept his lot in life? What's he going to do? Alex Cora seemed very matter-of-fact about the situation and how it has played itself out with Rafi Devers.
We had conversations throughout spring training, and he was very vocal about how he felt. And we made a decision. Alex is going to play third. Rafi's going to DH. And we all are in the winning business, and he understands that. It's like everything, right? You don't have to agree with it, but at the end of the day, what are we going to do to go out there and perform every single day? And he's been working hard, not only with his swing, but the routine, of course. It's a little bit different. Somebody mentioned, can he do it? Every DH used to be a position player until there were DHs, right? JD went through the same transition. In 2018, he was an outfielder. He became a DH, and you saw what happened. So we expect the same thing. The kid is ready to go. He's going to hit second against lefties and righties, and he's going to DH. And I think having Alex behind him is going to benefit him. And, honestly, I expect a great season from Rafi offensively.
When you frame it, it's the best thing for our team to win. How can Rafi argue against that, right?
As long as they win.
As long as they win. That's it. If you get off to, they start losing, maybe it turns a little bit.
Festers.
But Alex is so definitely equipped to, manage that ego in that situation, right? With Rafi,
mm-hmm.
like he knows what's best. We've been talking all throughout, you know, spring training, like, you know, and it's I just think he knows how to handle these guys, and it's a great point. You know, everybody, all DHs start out as position players,
and he's a baseball guy who's been around all of this. You mentioned he got his job because somebody gets hurt. Like,
that's right.
Mm-hmm. He's been through this ringer a number of times, and it's almost, this is a cheap shot from afar, and the guy's probably doesn't deserve it, but. Like Gerard Mayo.
So go ahead and take it.
Yeah. Gerard Mayo, I would worry about him handling the DH situation with Devers just because of his lack of experience and just, but Cora's been through this and we're in the winning business, right? We're trying to win. You want to win. I want to win. If we all win, we all make a lot of money. We have a lot of fun. We have parades and, right. and they give us big fancy rings with lots of diamonds on them. So it's just, it's funny to me. You were ahead of the curve on this, Ted. You like laughed this off pretty early on.
I guess I just felt like the tone of Rafi's no, like he was clearly telling you how he felt, but I just didn't get like he was just screw this place. I want out. Call get me traded out of here tomorrow, and I just feel like, you know, that's 5 weeks before the season starts, and all these good vibes with Alex Bregman being there and how the team, how everybody felt about the team. It just was like. Rafi had to get on board. And he's not, I don't think he's got the strong, domineering personality behind the scenes. I felt like he was going to acquiesce eventually. Like, I think when you got Poppy and all these guys saying, you know, it's really about winning. And, but hey, it's great that he feels that way because he's a competitor, but it's about winning.
Yep.
You hear that for 5 weeks straight. Eventually, the guy is going to be worn down and be like, you know what? It is about winning. I'll give up my position. It's not that big of a deal.
Did you guys see what MLB.com put out in the last hour?
Tell us. What do you got?
I believe I shared it also on our little text thread as well, but they put out their predictions for AL and NL winners and the World Series matchup and champion.
How about that?
Who's they?
MLB. MLB.com.
All the
the actual website?
The actual website.
AI?
It's not it.
I was surprised.
It is not a porn site. It is not something that's going to steal your bank account.
Better than Steamer?
Jesus.
That Steamer segment, that's going to be an all-time classic. We might reference that a few times over the years.
Yeah, as in, like, how was that one? It was a real Steamer.
It was a Steamer. We don't need any more Steamers.
Who does MLB?
And not the clam you wash and butter up.
Who do they got winning the AL?
The Boston Red Sox.
Boston Red Sox, baby.
And winning the NL? Winning the NL, of course, would be your Dodgers. Los Angeles Dodgers.
I mean, they're going 162-0.
Their world champion, the Los Angeles Dodgers. But to which I say, hey, who says no to that?
I mean, yeah, I'll take a World Series run. I'll take just a playoff run. I don't even need to get to the World Series. You give me win a series in the playoff, just that little taste of October postseason. We'll talk ourselves into more. We'll feel good about that time because if they're there, they had a good season. We'll talk ourselves into more. But the Dodgers are pretty freaking good. I'm not sure the Red Sox are quite in that league.
Do you got the Red Sox winning the AL East?
No, I don't. I think they will probably be a wild card team, but I think they might be a wild card team. We're going to flip a script. We have talked to Alex Cora every year about his team fading down the stretch and failing to go into the playoffs. I say this is the year they flip the switch and they are building toward the postseason. So as a wild card team, they're going to be the proverbial no one wants to play the Red Sox because they're hitting stride. They figure out the closer. They figure out issues bubbled up.
Maybe they get that one piece at the trade deadline.
Absolutely, Mason Miller.
Puts them over
you
the
listening comp. To Athletics? We'd like Mason Miller, if possible, Trevor Story. It's a good deal for you. Minor league stadiums love Trevor Story. It will go over big with your 14,000
Can I give you this
fans.
Pair of busted flip-flops and you give me a pair of Bruno Mollies?
Hey,
please.
You never know. People are dumb out there. Fitzy, if I said who is the most important player on the Red Sox this year, your answer would be, and please get this right because I want it to lead into the cut
answer.
I want to play, but who is the most important Red Sox?
Oh, Garrett Crochet.
Boom! Is Garrett Crochet ready? It's like we planned that. Is he ready to be the ace and the load that comes with that? Here's your answer.
We're about to see, but physically he is. This guy is a monster. You know, he's big and strong, and you know the way he goes about his business in the training room, in the weight room, is ace-like, right? But now, obviously, we got to go out there every 5 days and prove it. We're going to let him go. That's, you know, the expectations are 30-plus starts and help us win as many games as possible. And I truly believe physically he's different than others. You know, I joke with Sal, about that. I compare him with Sale, but he's stronger, right? And and Chris actually agree with that. But you'll see him. You know, he's ready to go, and it's just a matter of we have to be smart about it too. You know, the way the season starts, there's a lot of games early on. Then the schedule actually benefits us from June, July, and August. So we'll take care of him, and if we do that, he's going to take care of us.
I love how he just compares him. Hey, Chris, Sale, Garrett Crochet, he's a lot bigger and stronger and more physical than
he's
you,
like
right?
you, but strong.
It's like, dude.
And Sale's like, yeah, kind of right. I'm pretty skinny. I kind of blow away
Chris,
when the wind
Chris
blows.
Agreed. Yeah, the guy's a lot stronger than me. Yeah.
But I thought five words in the middle of that answer were the best thing I could hear from Alex Cora.
And what were they?
We're going to let him go. Like, no
Turn
limitations.
Loose.
No. Yep. The White
the
Sox.
30-plus starts. Ooh.
Yeah, 30-plus starts. But he got to 30-plus starts in a weird way last year when they were only letting him pitch four innings. No. We're letting him go. Yeah. He's our ace. If we need 6 1/3, 6 2/3, Thank seven God. Innings, strikeouts, Please. Let him go.
I think they need it. If you got a starter that can go seven innings, let him go seven innings, for crying out loud. You know, just, oh, my goodness. I do love having just a big body. I feel like they've made a conscious effort to kind of get bigger pitchers.
Yeah, because that's what works.
It usually does.
I mean, Pedro wasn't huge. That's a little different. But if you think of Josh Beckett, Curt Schilling, Roger Clemens, there's a lot of those.
Big boys.
Rich Keefe calls them hosses.
Yeah.
That they seem to be stronger, more durable, be able to do it.
A little attitude-y.
Little Texas attitude for some of them where they're. So he's the most exciting Red Sox player in probably, I guess, Sale. We were excited about Sale, and it worked out with Sale until it stopped working out with Sale. But
mound presence, it's Garrett Crochet all day.
Yeah.
Day over
Haas.
Absolutely.
Over Sale.
Ace.
Yeah.
I love also, too. Meanwhile, last year, they had the guy that finished in eighth place or seventh runner-up for MVP, overall offensive superpower, all-star game MVP with a ding-dong in the Midsummer Classic, and we haven't spent any time talking about him. I mean, Jaron Duran could be the most slept-on, under-talked, least-discussed superstar or, like, MVP candidate in ages. I love it. That's great. That's probably how he'll thrive.
That's the best place for him to be. Because lean on Devers, lean on Bregman, lean on these other guys, and let's just watch me do my thing.
Yeah.
He's also, and we've touched on this before, turned his entire Q rating and sort of mentality, relationship with the fan. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Last night, I'm watching the game in Monterey, Mexico, and he's signing autographs in the dugout behind the stands. Red Sox fans and people are there. He's really embraced. He said something that you can't say, got in trouble. He's paid his fines to society, whatever you want to call it. And I do think he's come out the other side smarter and better for it.
I mean, he played the best baseball he's ever played last year, and that gives you so much confidence going into this year.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And you know, money on the horizon, you keep doing that. You see these contracts they're handing out for multi-tool players and guys that can play. You can make yourself some coin.
He is exciting to watch, though.
He's fun. They're going to be fun. They're going to be entertaining, except for every good, for every yin, there's a yang or whatever you want to call it. We got to balance this out. So we're excited about Crochet. Fitzy, if I asked you a different question.
Go ahead.
We haven't practiced this, so let's get this right. We'll do it live. The biggest question for your Boston Red Sox heading into the season would be?
Oh, it's probably the back of the bullpen closer.
And what is Alex Cora's thoughts these days on the closer situation?
No, I think, the way Chapman has thrown the ball, he earned it, right? But at the same time, we're not going to pin ourselves in certain series, right? Especially the first two, you know, Texas and Baltimore. You know, their left-handed hitters. So if there's a pocket in the eighth that is Seager, you're going to see Chapman there. I don't know the situation with Baltimore. But, you know, if Henderson is leading out the eighth, you're going to see Chapman. But most of the time, he's going to pitch the ninth. We have to figure a few things out. We need consistency from some other guys, right? We try to, you know, address that throughout the offseason. Having Whitlock helps. Obviously, Slayton healthy is going to help. Justin Wilson is a good pitcher. He can get lefties and righties out. But the Kellys and Weiser, they need to do the job because you cannot only rely on your Slayton and Chapman and Wilson, right? There's going to be days that they're going to have to pitch the seventh and the eighth. And we expect them to perform. You know, I think that was something that happened last year, right? Like, if you look at our stats or our season, you know, we blew 30-plus saves. And it's not in the ninth, only in the ninth, right? It's from the sixth inning on, and we have to be better in that aspect.
interesting juxtaposition there. So I asked him about Garrett Crochet being ready to be the ace. Oh, he's ready to be the ace. We'll see, but he's ready to go. He's strong. He's better than Chris Sale. He's this. He's that. He's a hoss. No limitations. And then you ask him about closer. He's like, well, you know, Chapman's earned it, but he'll pitch some in the eighth, and Hendricks is still pitching.
Matchups.
And matchups, and it's like, if you if you had the Crochet of closers, right, you would have spent all those words talking about that guy and how good he looks and how strong he is. Yeah. The more he talked, the more you get an insight into, he knows he doesn't have a closer. He knows there's a question in the back end of the bullpen.
Not one that he feels real confident
about.
I mean, Aroldis has been pitching his ass off, though.
Aroldis Chapman can blow you away.
But do we feel like it's going to be consistent?
I think we talked a little bit about it earlier. I think one of the key numbers for this team will be blown saves again in the bullpen, whether that's Chapman, Hendricks, other people. I think that could tell you how good this team could be, and it will affect other guys, the starters. You know, when Hauk goes 5-6 innings and you're like, okay, he pitched really well, do you blow it after that, or do you build off of the momentum the starter gave you? But I think that answer was interesting. The more he talked about roles and matchups and other people, the more it told you. Mm. He doesn't. If he had Mason Miller, an all-star closer who threw 100, he would have just said, yeah, we got the front end, we got the back end. He's going to go out there, he's going to dominate, he's going to do X, he's going to do Y. He doesn't. He knows it. That's why they will trade for one. Hopefully it's Mason Miller at some point. But that was Alex Cora. And like I said, if you missed it, there was more good stuff to it. He talked about a lot of different topics. You can go to the Odyssey app. Just subscribe to WEEI Afternoons so you can get that interview each and every Wednesday throughout the baseball season here with myself, Fitzy, Ted Johnson on WEEI Afternoons. Up next, it's odds and ends, and we have some interesting audio from LeBron James, who we thought he had an ally in media.
Damn, bro. I thought you guys were friends.
I don't think they're friends anymore. Oof. I think his friend will be crying himself to sleep tonight on his big pillow like the old woman that he looks like on TV. That's next here on WEEI Afternoons. WEEI Afternoons, time now for Odds and Ends, which is brought to you by Cars for Kids, your trusted charity for car donations. Also accepts donations of boats, RVs, motorcycles, and real estate. Call today, 877-CARS-FOR-KIDS. That's Cars with a K. And for Odds and Ends today, we have a guy that has sort of built his career, Brian Windhorst, on chronicling LeBron James, the great GOAT. King, whatever you want to call him, since high school. He was the chosen one through Cleveland and Miami and Cleveland and LA and the whole thing. And he's always sort of sold himself as LeBron's guy. I think people just accepted that. Well, I'll tell you who hasn't really accepted that. That would be LeBron James. He was on the Pat McAfee podcast, and
I'm surprised to hear this a little bit.
Yeah, he was borderline not very nice. He was kind of mean to his boy Brian Windhorst. Pat McAfee set it up, and LeBron dunked it.
I see a lot of too. Like, I seen Brian Windhorst on one of these shows not too long ago. Like,
you guys played together in high school.
This guy was like, you know, says he's like my best friend. These guys are just weird, but
dude,
like,
wow.
Okay, so
Windhorst has got
to
be.
You don't have to even really acknowledge it, let alone crap on him for it. He's been known as the LeBron whisperer and apologist for over a decade.
And if you feel this way, couldn't you have? I don't know. Reached out to Windhorst and be like, hey,
bro.
Maybe back off how close we are. We're not that close.
Yeah.
But to embarrass him on one of the biggest podcast shows, Pat McAfee, and you know once it's on it's going viral.
And Windhorst has done a lot for his career.
Yes.
And he just took a big steaming dump all over it, man.
Yeah,
yikes.
I don't think that's okay. Yeah, what, Brian? I mean, Dan.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Brian, you look like Windhorst. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Okay. I don't want to participate anymore.
What do you got, Dan? No. Sorry.
Come on, Dan. What do you got, bud?
No, didn't it kind of come across as he's tried to have that conversation privately and he still goes out and peddles the same you-know-what?
Maybe that's it. Maybe this is
that felt like I've reached my breaking point on you trying to get dirt on me.
But it kind of makes him sound almost like a stalker or a... I don't know. It sounds weird.
Yeah, makes him
sound beyond just, because it's one thing
to. What do you mean, like Mark Wahlberg and Ted with Brady and Ted 2?
Yeah, or what was the, remember the De Niro movie, The Fan or whatever?
The Fan.
Like, I don't know. Something in LeBron's voice kind of made it sound more like that.
Well, because Windhorst has literally made his career off of covering LeBron.
Yeah, but you could do that without ticking him out. Like, you could just be fortunate enough to, you grew up in the same area as LeBron, so you have information. You already have a background. You covered him in high school, so you might as well cover him in college, whatever.
It is funny, though, that we automatically assume Brian Windhorst is an NBA expert, and he gives opinions on, like, hard opinions on guys. And
it's true.
But we all take it as, oh, you know, the guy knows what he's talking about.
Yeah, he parlayed.
What qualifies Brian Windhorst as being
he's LeBron's guy.
Oh, there you go.
Except
LeBron doesn't think so, yeah.
He's not my effing guy. Get him out of here. So that's Windhorst. We did need to update Dan Ball. We wanted to get to the WEEI Afternoons nickname bracket, because I continue to be very upset about one very specific battle going on, and I'm not sure if it's actually closed voting now, but at WEEI Afternoons on Twitter, we are knee-deep, headed towards the Sweet 16 of our nickname bracket. What are the latest, Dan Ball?
So all of our round of 32s are officially out, so we're closing in on the end of the hockey region. So
okay.
We will start our Sweet 16 tomorrow with the results that we have. Working backwards, the most recent one that came out was Rick Middleton, nifty. He has a lead over Jumbo Joe Thornton.
Oh, Jumbo's losing?
Jumbo is losing.
Ooh.
Something we've all become accustomed to. It's about 60. 64 to 36 or so right now. Still 18 hours left, so plenty of time for you to go campaign and swing the vote.
Vote Jumbo. Vote often.
There you go. The other one from today, I thought there was two that was... oh, yeah, there is. All right. Grapes. Don Cherry right now is leading Frank Brimzek, Mr. Zero, 77 to 23. So those are the two that were posted earlier today from the hockey bracket. The other two, and this is the one that upset you the most, and you
very
were tweeting
much
about this earlier
very
today.
Very much.
Pasta, and this vote has gone final. Pasta won by a 75 to 25 margin over Blaine Locknet Monster Locker.
What are we doing, people?
How can you get a better nickname 25 than a goalie who's the Locknet Monster? Like, that should be in the final four, whatever. Maybe hockey doesn't get as many votes.
What happened is what you were afraid would happen.
Stars,
oh,
you voted for Pasta.
It's your Pasta.
You're so not voting for the guy or you know what you want him to be
or
the goals. Like,
yeah,
vote.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, Mr. Zero is a good one. I wasn't familiar with Mr. Zero before this process started. That is a great nickname, right? Like, that is
phenomenal.
And so is the Loch Ness Monster, but you people are too simple-minded and are voting for the player.
Snuck one in at 5:53.
So, Dan Ball, what is the rest of the schedule? So tomorrow is the Sweet 16 in the real NCAA tournament.
That's right. So we've caught up to the regular schedule. So
nice job.
I can go look at the text for the others, but the Sweet 16 will run tomorrow into Friday, and then we'll have results for Elite Eight, Final Four, and our national championship will be on the national championship day, which is Monday, April the 7th.
How are we all feeling about the Sweet 16? I know, Ted, you're not real big on it, but
I've found the other stuff to be more interesting. Five coaches have already gone to new teams.
Yeah?
There's 900 players that have already entered the transfer portal.
Some that are playing.
Yeah.
Which I find weird.
Oh, I thought you couldn't enter.
Many of which played at UConn.
Yeah, no, there is there's a guy on which team?
I thought the rules were you couldn't enter.
Or he at least said he's going into the portal.
Okay.
Like, you basically got guys that are playing for a championship who are already looking at their next destination.
Yeah.
It's just so...
This is all going to have to come to a stop.
But when you see five coaches leaving their schools after they get bounced...
It's not just the players or the coaches. The whole thing is screwed up with dates.
But
they even asked Calipari. He didn't even know that it opened on Monday.
But explain to me how... but he had a really good kind of thing about freshmen. He goes, there's freshmen that should be getting scholarships that I can't give to them because of the transfer portal.
Right. Yeah, it's so
broken. My son, your son's gonna
so
deal with
broken.
That. It's
this whole thing. I don't have the
ratings
answers.
For the NCAA tournament were ridiculous.
Ted, highest they've been in 32 years.
What?
It's popular. And Duke's gonna win it all, so I can win my Jason Tatum and I can celebrate together with Cooper Flagg, future number one pick in the NFL. The NBA draft. That's gonna
do it,
Christian Arkin.
Hey, said he wasn't coming, but now he's hot. He's hot on something.
He's hot on something. He's always hot on something. Go ahead. Turn your mic on and yell about something.
Yeah, of course I'm hot on something.
What do you hate?
Jesus.
What are you angry about?
That shirt.
Is it me? Do you want to yell at me? Who do you want to yell at, Christian Arkin, the host of the Christian
Arkin? I don't really
want
to yell at anybody. I was just saying, if you want to wrap up, go ahead. I didn't. I heard you about to throw to the end. And I was saying, go ahead and go if you want.
I was getting mixed messages from Stiz and you came in all hot and bothered with a lot of energy, as you always do.
Always.
And you'll get that energy on the Christian Arkin show, because he's had a lot of short shows lately, so he's got a lot of pent-up energy.
And a vacation, mind you.
And a vacation. Lots of different things going on, so he is just going to let it all go for the next 4 hours till 10 o'clock.
I'm very excited, by the way. 7 o'clock tonight, for an entire hour, We're going to have Gordo and Sammy from the Play Tessie podcast live in studio to preview the Red Sox season. So excited about that.
You fell victim to Joe Braverman and his trying to get that podcast.
He put a gun to me and said, you put them on the show, and if you don't.
That tracks.
He's jumping up and down behind the window back there celebrating. So the Play Tessie boys will be here. Christian Arkan's here the next 4 hours. Opening day is tomorrow. Can you believe it? We're all excited like the manager Alex Cora was when he joined us earlier this afternoon. Tomorrow's short show. Our first short show as the new show here on WEEI Afternoons.
Wow.
Opening day.
Milestone.
We get the Christian Arkan shift. We work like an hour, and then we get to go home. So I'm looking forward to it. Fitzy, Ted, nice job. Dan Ball, great job. Other than the Steamer website, Stiz, great
job. We'll bounce back.
Other than this weird crossover issue here, stick around. The Christian Arkan show is next, and we'll talk to you at 2 tomorrow. That's WEEI Afternoons out. We don't need any more steamers.
Who does MLB?
And not the clam you wash and butter up.